This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The National LGBTI Health Alliance held its 8th conference, Health in Difference 2013, Our Bodies, Our Minds, in Melbourne in April 2013. Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, is proud to partner with the Alliance to bring you this recording of the 2013 conference.
Tomorrow we'll be talking about conference recommendations, and one of them that I'll be putting forward will be dealing with this issue of the religious exemptions. There is still a Senate inquiry going on into the Aged Care Act and into the Sex Discrimination Act. Submissions close next week for those of you so inclined to write a letter. And we need to remind government that their policy, their stated policy on the 20th of March when they said they weren't going to do things, is to limit religiously run aged care providers from discriminating against LGBTI people. They haven't put that clause into the bill. We want to encourage bipartisan support to do that. But we're going to show you a slightly different side, and I have to say that this is an increasing side of the faith-based community that deal with aged care. We're going to hear now from the Director CEO from Uniting Care New South Wales, ACT. It's one of the largest aged care providers in Australia, with 5,700 residential aged care beds, 7,000 community care clients, and 2,500 retirement village units. Steve's been in his current role since September 2011 and has been a senior manager in faith-based aged care organisations for the last 12 years. The interesting thing that I like about United Care New South Wales ACT is it was A, the first, and B, the only organisation to use its own funds to set up an LGBTI project, fully funded full-time person, working on how do they make their entire organisation across the entire landmass of the state of New South Wales to become inclusive for LGBTI people. And I'm hoping that Steve's going to talk about his inspired care principles because they inspire me. So please welcome Steve Chulin.
Good afternoon, everyone. For me, it's a privilege to be here and to hear those stories and the other stories that we've heard. I think you have to be moved, and for a provider of aged care services, it just gives us more incentive to do what we must do in relation to supporting members of the LGBTI communities. I just want to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land and pay my respects to elders past and present, and to acknowledge any Aboriginal people who are here today. I'll just grab this. Uniting Care Ageing New South Wales ACT is the aged care ministry of the Uniting Church in New South Wales ACT. And the Uniting Church expresses God's love through these values, the ones that you can see there. The first is fundamental. And what it's about at the end of the day is respecting the inherent dignity of each person, accepting people for who they are, accepting them in their own social context, their own relationships, and acknowledging and respecting that they have a right to determine the way they live and to respect and value them accordingly. Another that you'll see there, and I was interested to see that Catherine had this in hers, it is a value of the Uniting Church to celebrate and support diversity, not to tolerate and accept, but to celebrate diversity. And so I'm fortunate that in our organisation, when we talk about celebrating diversity across a range of different areas, including LGBTI, that's a very comfortable place to be when you're in the Uniting Church in New South Wales and ACT. And that idea of welcoming and inclusive, I think it's been made very clearly that it's not enough to accept or to tolerate, but truly this is about ensuring that people feel welcome for who they are and being included for who they are. And so it is a wonderful thing. I went home not long after I'd been started in this role with Uniting Care Ageing and said to my wife, it's a wonderful place where you can work and you know that they love everybody. And that's truly what this is about. In terms of the history of Uniting Care Ageing in Aged Care. Uniting Church in New South Wales and ACD has been providing services, aged care services, for about 50 years. And over that time, you can imagine that things have changed a little bit. I think that there has been a tradition of aged care being relatively institutional, where the institutions have had to set the rules and people have had to accommodate. People who have come in have had to adjust it to those rules. I would say, though, that Uniting Care will have always had a strength in a couple of areas. One is in relationships. It has always been a relationship-based organisation. And the other thing is valuing community. Community in its diversity. That doesn't mean it hasn't had its moments in relation to that over the years, but it has certainly at least had that benefit that it has been built on those foundations. And I don't think we've been alone in our challenges in the past. We've reflected, I would suspect, community attitudes in relation to various groups of people, including people from the LGBTI communities. I know I used to work for another faith-based organisation, and my experience was very limited in terms of members of the LGBTI community, so far as I knew. People didn't disclose openly their sexuality or gender. The times that you found out was when it was messy because of an involuntary disclosure. And an example I had of that was about 10 years ago. A gentleman who had been in our retirement village that everyone knew was a very conservative gentleman. He was admitted to the residential aged care facility on that site, and he was suffering from dementia. I had a complaint from the maintenance manager that that gentleman was making sexual advances to his maintenance men. And I suspect that the reason why all that had happened was that the dementia had attacked the frontal lobe, which, where he previously had controlled his natural feelings and experiences. And whether he had acted those out or not in terms of his life, that was who he was. And so the maintenance men were concerned about how to deal with this and whether we should tell his daughter. And those messy, involuntary disclosures, messy for everybody, were a sign of the times where people couldn't be who they were. And I hope as we move forward that truly people are able to be who they are, and that they can be respected and valued for that. Inspired care is where we've, in the last 5 years, Uniting Care Ageing has become committed to what we call inspired care. And the fundamental principle of inspired care is that we know we are successful when people feel accepted, valued and loved for who they are. Henry Nguyen, a professor at Yale University, is a professor in hospitality, said that hospitality is not a subtle invitation for the guest to accept the lifestyle of the host. It is enabling people to have space to make their own decisions about their lives and to live according to those decisions. That's what inspired care is about. It's an understanding the history, the social context, the relationships, the things that are important to each person, and enabling them to make decisions about their lives, to continue to live the life that they want to live, and for us to facilitate that and support them in doing that. You can imagine that it's hard to achieve that every day of the week across 15,000 clients. But if I ask anyone, and I've done it in every single vocation that we have across the whole of our organisation, if I ask them what inspired care is about, I've not found one who couldn't tell me and who didn't sort of raise up off the ground when they told me. So that's what we're about. As I say, we have our faults and sometimes we fall down a little bit, but that's what we're about. The other thing that we're about is social justice. One of the great attributes of Uniting Church is that people are passionate about social justice. And so that in areas like homelessness, where we have four specialist services across New South Wales. And we also have, of our 2,500 retirement village units, we have over 600 people in affordable rental units. In relation to Aboriginal communities, we have four specialist services spread out across the country in Aboriginal services for Aboriginal communities. We have specialist services for 21 different language groups. They're the people that we want to serve. And of course, as we've heard over and over in these last couple of days, we have a group of people who are members of the LGBTI communities who certainly have been marginalised in relation to aged care services. And I said 2 years ago, in recognition that we needed to do more in relation to aged care services for members of the LGBTI communities, we took a number of steps to improve our services. As Corey mentioned, we recruited a full-time project officer to really help us to improve our services, to build relationships with the LGBTI networks. And I'm delighted that Kelly Shields took up that role, and with support from people like Andrew Collins, who is with her, we've really made some strides. Kelly was appointed in 2011. Since then, we've established strong relationships with ACON and a range of other LGBTI community networks, the Gender Centre and OII. We've let our staff know that this is an important area for us, not just in terms of our services, but that our staff have to feel comfortable in being who they are. So we're a member of Pride and Diversity. We've obviously become associated as a member with the LGBTI Health Alliance. Through Kelly, we've become members of LGBTI interagency networks, both in the metropolitan Sydney and also on the North Coast, which are the larger populations for the LGBTI communities in New South Wales. And through Kelly's engagement, representation of us on the ageing strategy, we've had direct involvement in that. As well as that, we've had a very strong internal and external communication process. So internally, when I go to the church, the board of the Uniting Church in New South Wales ACT, which I do occasionally, I talk in their terms. You know, the kingdom of God is present when the lame walk, you know, the dumb speak, and the blind have sight. Well, I say that in relation to our removal of blindness, that in order to see our brother, we've had our blindness removed by being able to see our brothers and sisters in the LGBTI communities as truly our brothers and sisters. And with our staff, they know through a whole range of different communication and things that we do, they know our commitment, and if they're not involved in that, not committed to that, they'll find it hard to continue to be our staff members. Similarly, when Joe Hockey stood up and said that it was a waste of money to spend $2.5 million a year on sensitivity training in relation to LGBTI, people with LGBTI from the LGBTI communities, to train aged care staff, we spoke out publicly against that, and we will always do that because we think that's a fundamental step in providing better services. And in the recent debate about the Anti-Discrimination Act, every one of the Uniting Care Australia members, the aged care members, and we represent something like 7 or 8% of the aged care beds in this country, every one of us affirmed the fact that people from the LGBTI communities are very welcome, and we're doing everything we can to make our services as acceptable and inclusive and welcoming as they can be. So that's what we're trying to do in our own way. And I guess in trying to truly put the inspired care principles into practice, what we have done is to try to find out through a range of means, through the networks, and also through directly asking people through an online survey, asking members of the LGBTI communities, tell us about your experience in health and aged care, and tell us about what you want to see in health and aged care services. So this survey has been conducted over the last months of last year and the first few months of this year. Online survey, 212 participants. You can see from the slide about 50% of those lesbian women, 35% gay men, the remaining 15%, so not a large representation from bisexual, transgender and intersex people. The majority of the participants were over 45 years old, and one third of the respondents belonged to the age group of 45 to 54. A lot of them were from inner Sydney and the north coast of New South Wales. I think the first interesting thing that we can see is that whether that fear of discrimination and that uncertainty, whether people can say who they are, whether that still is the feeling. Certainly amongst the respondents, what was interesting is that 35% of people either agreed or strongly agreed that they preferred not to disclose sexuality or gender when engaging with health and aged care services. And another 11% were unsure, so that's 46%. And while some progress has been made, there's clearly a long way to go. So you can either look at that as half full or half empty, but there's still clearly a long way to go. In terms of having difficulty in accessing health or aged care services because of prejudice about sexuality and gender, we can see that 25% of the people agreed or strongly agreed that they have had difficulties in accessing health or aged care because of that prejudice. And again, quite a large number, 17%, said they're unsure, which may be a reflection of that they are not sure whether that's affected it, if they've had an adverse situation, or they're just not confident in their ability to access those services because of the potential for prejudice. It was interesting in those groups, we had a small number of people who either had received community aged care packages or were currently receiving them. And so only a handful had previously, five people had previously received community aged care packages. But two of those five agreed with the statement, I discontinued the use of aged care packages because my care needs were not met appropriately. Now that's too small a sample to make any real conclusion from, but it's still that and the other indication which those who are currently receiving it, two of the four, it's only four, but two of the four were satisfied and two weren't. So, you know, small samples of those, but it does give an indication not everything's rosy. Some of the comments that have come from the survey really draw out certain themes. The top line there talks about two people who make the comments, again, this issue of homophobia and discrimination when they're trying to access aged care and healthcare services. We know that there is an inherent fear of everybody going into aged care. No one wakes up in the morning and says, I'd like to have aged care services. When you compound that with a fear of discrimination, it's a pretty powerful issue. A lot of the comments in here are about fundamental aspects of respect. Will I be respected? Will people treat me as a person? Will they recognise and respect my needs for who I am? The issue about information requirements. How do I get good information about whether my needs will be met, whether I'll be treated as a person or not, a person who is with my sexuality or gender? How will I know that I'll get appropriate support and care by people who know what they're doing? I think the other thing is that there was a recognition that that training, which Joe Hockey denigrated, is fundamental, and that consumers want to know that that training has occurred so that they can come into a reasonable environment, one where they will receive not just good care, but appropriate care. When we asked what's important to the members of the LGBTI communities in accessing aged care, it was interesting to note that the number one issue was the ability to maintain social connections within the LGBTI communities. So that's one list, and then if we look at all the others, you know, support of people, ability to participate in social activities, dementia care, etc., etc., it could be almost any other group would get exactly the same thing. That's exactly what we'd expect from any other group. But what is different in this group is the ability to maintain connections with the LGBTI communities. Now, of course, the big question a lot of people are interested in is whether, in fact, people want to have a LGBTI-specific aged care service, or whether they want a mainstream, if I can put it that way, service where people know what they're doing. And it came through that 58% said that at this point in time, their preference would be an LGBTI-specific service, and 42% said that they would be more comfortable in a mainstream service, and I'm working on the assumption that they would expect people to know what they are doing and that they are sensitive to the individual needs of the people involved. I think what that means in terms of key messages, what's important is this connection, maintaining connection with the communities, that fear of disclosure of sexuality and gender still continues today for a large number of people, that there are gaps in aged care services at LGBTI community members, and those gaps have to be filled, and people have to be confident that those gaps have been filled before they're going to access services. Members of those communities want to be respected and included. And I think it's important that aged care providers not only send the message that they are concerned and want to welcome and provide inclusiveness for members of LGBTI communities, but they're actually able to demonstrate that they're prepared to deliver on it. And part of that is partnering with other organisations who are committed to those communities. So what will the future look like? Well, certainly Uniting Care Ageing is going to continue to develop its strategies in this area and to continue to improve our services. We want to improve the knowledge and inclusiveness and welcoming of our staff. We want them to know what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. We will continue to build our relationships with the LGBTI communities. In relation to our staff, we have commenced training, the ACON training, for our staff, and about 50 staff members, mainly managers, have been trained so far. We also have a program where we've asked for volunteer champions across all of our services. Having asked 2 weeks ago, we've already got 30 volunteers. We're going to have a large number of volunteers because it fits with our culture. We will continue to roll out that LGBTI training strategy. We will in future look to what type of services will best serve the members of the LGBTI communities. I think what you can be sure of is that there will be choice from providers. As we look at the information about what is desired, we'll have to make decisions about whether we improve our existing services or create specific services. Our starting point will be to improve the inclusiveness and the appropriateness of the care and support in our existing services. If we do that, if we continue to work on our strategies and work with other members of networks of the LGBTI communities, we believe that the inspired care principles will apply to all members of the LGBTI communities as they do in their own unique way to other marginalised groups in our communities. And we believe that we can create aged care services which are truly welcoming and inclusive, and where you can have confidence that appropriate care will be provided by people who value and respect and honour you for who you are.
Thank you.
You know, for me personally, it's always challenging. On one hand, I'm standing there talking about faith-based providers need to lose their religious exemption. On the other hand, I'm talking about the wonderful work that somebody like UnitedCare does. And I think for me, the place where I was able to harmonise those two things is those inspired care principles. And it's about creating that cultural ethos within an organisation and having that framework that LGBTI is but one plug-in to that framework. Thank you very much for creating 15,000 spots for LGBTI people in New South Wales that are going to be available. We look forward to filling them over the coming years. Okay, there is a short time for Q&A, and I'm just going to grab Kelly and ask her to do me a favour and pop that on that stand that I stole before. So I'm going to start with this lady over here, then I'll go to Jude. There's a mic behind you.
Thank you, all of you, for those talks. Steve, this question is directed at you. I have a lived experience with a mother with dementia living in a rest home in New Zealand. I have absolutely no complaints about the rest home whatsoever. Last time I was visiting, I met a friend of my mother's, and she that lives there also, and she happened to mention that her husband lived there also. And I said, oh, how wonderful. But what she did disclose was that they actually have two single rooms side by side. And I said, how sad that you can't sleep in the same room as your husband. And I'm just wondering, you know, what you're doing sounds wonderful, but what are you doing on a practical side? For instance, do you have double rooms for your heterosexual clients and indeed for your lesbian, gay, transsexual, etc. clients?
Yeah, happy to answer that. What we try to do is what people want. And so sometimes we have a couple in the same room and they use the other room as a lounge room. Sometimes they prefer to have two separate rooms. We also have situations where there will be someone living in the residential aged care service and their partner will actually come in at night and be with them at night. We just try to make it work for the people who are involved as best we can in terms of their preferences. What's the difficult part of that is when you have one partner who wants it to work a particular way and the other one doesn't. That's the challenge, but their challenge is in all circumstances. But what we try to do is accommodate people's needs and their preferences. And we don't have any huge difficulties with that. I would say at this point in time, in terms of members of the LGBTI communities, there's still a reluctance to actually, you know, well, first of all, to come into aged care and to be able to disclose their situation in aged care. That's how we would do accommodate people today, and that's how we would always accommodate people.
Question in the corner. And if anybody else has a question, please come to the mic.
This is not so much to do with aged care, but religious exemption. I am from a Catholic school. I am from a rural area where most of the people are Catholic or in some sort of Christian group, and their religion is some sort of form of Christianity. I was a part of the diversity group at my school, a Catholic school, since year 7, and it's all sorts of diversity, multiculturalism, LGBTI, disability. And we put up a poster about LGBTI rights and no homophobia. We were closed down for about 6 months, and we were told we couldn't do it. And our case was brought up to the Australian Catholic Education Office. And 6 months later, they said, well, there's nothing wrong with that. So I'm wondering, how can we promote LGBTI and get the word out when we're in such a fundamentalist, much more discriminatory religious... and this is for you, Steve, because you're working with a religious organisation, so...
When you say get the word out, do you want to maybe just elaborate what you mean by get the word out?
Well, we... In school, I've heard a lot of... it's very homophobic. It's like, oh, okay. Look, he's, you know, a fag, poof. like all these kind of words are normal. In a Catholic school, people can't go, well, you're gay, that's all right. Or the homophobic language is, it's, we're not going to go, well, that's homophobic, because then we might be seen as promoting homosexuality. And in a Catholic school, it's been hard to, because we have a hidden, a very, very hidden LGBTI community.
Thank you. Steve, do you want to take that first?
I think there are two parts for my response. One is the way we try to deal with it is to demonstrate how you can do it. Because I think those examples are the most powerful in influencing other church groups. If Uniting Care is doing it, or somebody else in that area is doing it, then the challenge is, well, why can't the others? The other, I think one of the problems they face, those who are going down this track, is that it's not really about aged care. One of the main submissions that went in, I called the CEO of their largest aged care, that denomination's largest aged care group.
I can tell you who it is later.
And I said to him,
there was
him
only
that,
one bad submission.
I said to him, why did you do that? And he said, I didn't even know we'd done it. We just put it in for LGBTI-specific community care packages. This isn't about aged care. This is about the fear of the church as to where, if that exemption goes down, what other exemptions occur. And it's really sad that people... It's sad generally that we've got that situation, because we shouldn't have it. But it's, from my point of view, even sadder that people who become pawns in this are older people requiring care. And that shouldn't happen, nor should the other broader agenda happen. But the reality is the people who get caught up in it, the pawns, are older people requiring care. And that's just terrible. So I think privately you'll find that it's not actually the aged care providers who really want to discriminate. I think there is a broader agenda that's at work, and the aged care providers aren't actually able to address that. And that's why it is even more important for people like ourselves and others to stand up and not just do it, but tell people we're doing it so that other people can feel as though they need to do it as well.
I just want to take it a little broader. Yeah.
Well, just the other thing to say is our colleagues here are here, Ros Ward and Joel Radcliffe from Safe Schools Coalition, and they've got their own revolution happening as well.
And I think one of the great things I read in the third national younger same-sex attracted genderqueer people writing themselves in three was the increasing number of younger same-sex attracted and genderqueer people who are identifying with spirituality. So I reckon when I'm in an aged care home listening to somebody who's 30 talking about aged care up on the stage, it's going to be really interesting to see where this conversation about spirituality and sexuality, gender and sex is actually headed, because I think there's a bit of a cycle going on about trying to find a balance. So it's definitely an issue, and it's something that we need to tackle. Okay, I have a short announcement, two things. One, if you haven't read it, please read the April National LGBTI Health Alliance newsletter, Health Update. It's all about ageing and aged care, and there's a wonderfully moving speech from Noel Tovey, who couldn't attend today. Sadly, this is my last function as the convener of the Ageing and Aged Care Working Group, and I just want to do a very big public thank you to Warren Talbot, Warren Summers, Garvey Anasari, and Sue J. Kentland in the National LGBTI Health Alliance's office for their wonderful secretariat support for me while I've been in convener. You guys rock, and can't wait to keep working with you in a new way. Thanks very much, everybody.
You have been listening to a recording from the Health in Difference 2013 conference held in Melbourne in April 2013. For more information about the National LGBTI Health Alliance, head to lgbtihealth.org.au. And for more information on Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, explore joy.org.au. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.